Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, good night. Welcome to Radio Angola Show. I am Florindo Chivukut. We have a great show for today. For many of you that were listening last week, we're going to discuss about the human rights issue in Angola. Of course, there's a lot of there's a systematic violation of human rights in Angola that I believe we need to discuss as because those are extremely important. I believe we have someone in line right now. Hello? Hello?
Oh, Florindo. Hello, Serafin.
Hey, Serafin. How you doing? Thanks for calling, Serafin. I believe I don't need to introduce you. Mr. Serafin is a he's also work for Radio Angola as well, and today is going to will be part of the our guests to discuss the systematic violations of human rights in Angola. We also have someone else in line. Hello, can you hear me? Hello.
Yes.
My
name is Antonio Camoso, aquí Philadelphia.
Hey, Mr. Antonio Camoso, how are you doing today?
I'm fine, thank you. Yourself?
I'm doing well, thank you. Thanks for calling today. Today we have the topic we're going to be discussing today is in regard to human rights the systematic violation of human rights in Angola. As you may know, there's the abuses of human rights. That's something that happened very often in Angola. I'm referring to assassinations. I'm referring to illegal detention of youth protesters who some of them were arrested a couple of weeks ago. And I'm also referring to those who have brutalized simply because they have a different way of thinking. We have someone else in line, I believe.
Florindo, is that which one of us has someone is back? You know the back.
Yes, I'm not sure if it's George or Mr. Antonio Camos, but there's someone in the background. If you could please just make sure.
George is online.
Yes. George, I'm not sure if that noise coming from you. There's someone in the background, I believe. If you could please just go somewhere, there's less noise.
I don't know it's from, but I believe it's not from me. Maybe is it the children making noise?
Yes.
Okay, yes. There's a cool with me.
Okay. Well, let's get started then. The systematic violation of human rights in Angola, that's our topic of today. So let's start with Mr. Serafin. So what are your thoughts about the human rights violation in Angola? What can we do in order to mitigate this issue?
Okay, here's the what we have to bear in mind is that we are governed by a government controlled by criminals. The activities of this government is based on corruption and violence. So the same individuals that are running the country, they promote corruption and violence as a way to sustain the regime. In a society as ours, Angola, where the civic society is not as strong as in America, Of course, you will see, you will witness very often crimes committed or perpetrated by the officials from the government against defenseless citizens. What is danger in this in our society? The danger in our society is that these individuals, the government individuals who commit crimes against defenseless citizens, they use the government institutions. They use the government institutions to assassinate, to kill defenseless citizens. These are premeditated actions. So, human rights in Angola. When you talk human rights violation in Angola, it's a very it's deplorable. And the saddest part is that the government, most of the crimes committed by the government, they go just unpunished.
Mr. George, thank you, Ms. Serafin. Mr. George, we all know that Angolan government is committing heinous crime against its own people. We all know. Do you think the international community is turning blind eye on this issue of human rights?
Well, I always like to draw this context when it comes to human rights issue internationally. The world as it is manipulated by the United States of America. Whatever the state says, then others follow suit. But here's the problem in Angola. Angola's got the much-needed commodity that the world needs. And as long as Eduardo Santos remains humble to the rest of the world and a dictator to its own people, don't ever say anything in open. Now, it's we as Angolans have to come together to begin to make our problem known, because nobody's going to make it known unless we react and we show the world that we are really oppressed. When I go out and talk to a few friends, sometimes they say I'm from Angola, and the next time they call me is that, are you the guy who is your president, the richest president in the world? Man, where did he get all this money from? You try to explain it, and they laugh at me and said, well, the natural resources were not supposed to be personal property. But as it is, it is what it is in Angola. Now, having said that, it's very vital for us to tend to separate. There are people who actually are missing. Those who fought for the initial liberation of Angola are the same people feel today that other Angolans do not deserve the same freedom. Look, first of all, we have a man who's 33 years in the presidency. He's never won an election. Secondly, he has created what's defined as he calls it an independent elections board, which is headed by English something. I don't know the other name. The only name I remember is English. And when you look at it, nothing is independent out of it. We look at the media the same way. You know, the access to state resources. Dos Santos' party has nominated everything. Look at the laws. There are a lot of electoral laws that are being violated. There are a lot of, you know, plain clothes police officers that are killing peaceful protesters, beating them up. And the world is ignoring for this cause. Believe me or not, I always tell people, we must remember, in as long as Eduardo Santos thinks keeping an educated population is the best way to continue the power, is forgetting the proclivity that made a lot of Angolans rise into nobility. You remember, in the 60s, when the Angolan Revolution started, it was not people like José Eduardo Santos who were very educated. It was not Savimbi. It was not NATO. It was the Cotton Age farmers that rose against the Portuguese. The longer he keeps these people in poverty, illiterate, these people one day raise against him. Believe me or not, Burkina Faso, what has happened in Burkina Faso today, is going to happen in Angola one day if this man doesn't change, if he ignores the call from the Angolan population for him to resign and give back all the stolen property from the state. I'll vent to the next speaker.
Absolutely. Thank you, Mr. George. Mr. Antonio Camoso, what's your thoughts are in regard to the human rights abuses, the systematic human rights violations in Angola?
The problem for Angola is, don't you know, Agostinho Neto and to today, Angola never had a research. Angola overlisted Eduardo dos Santos. So still, every time, so still, never through the people Angolan, he take in Eduardo dos Santos. Eduardo dos Santos, he bring different people, different country help him. No people for Angolan take it. He say, okay, Eduardo dos Santos, he's president for Angola, not. And today, everything for Angola go out. The people for Angola is sick, no have medicine, the kids no have school, the people no have clothes, no have nothing. The rich for Angola, the COVID thing for dos Santos. When the people of Angola is fat, 14 years for Portuguese, and the today, the people of Angola, the little for unit for ordinary, in order to send always kill. Nobody opening the mouth, in order to send kill, because in order to send is no president for Angola. Nobody take a president, to send, he say, okay, have a relation, the people of Angola, he take it to send, he say, my president, the same, different country. Have a nation. Angola never have a nation. Over the Angola. And why do you sound so still?
Mm-hmm.
He taking different people in different countries. Bring the Angola. He say, oh, no, why do you sound is win? And why do you sound is win? No people Angola and he taking to you. Why do you sound? I don't understand different country. America too, no opening the mouth. He say, why do you sound he doing? Because on the petrol, every month is coming in this country. Mm-hmm. Over leash for Angola is coming in this country. And in this country, nobody opening the mouth. The people of Angola is have a problem for 50,000 years for Portuguese was a little better. This time, he said, okay, in the independence. Independence, he ain't going. No fire. This mm-hmm. one is no good.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I don't understand everybody what he think. What's in going on in Angola?
Mm-hmm. And thank you, Mr. Antonio Camoso. I believe we have someone else online. Hello.
Okay. Yes.
What's your name, sir? Do we have someone else in line? Hello.
Hello. My name is Angola.
Oh, Macom Angola, how are you doing, sir?
Oh, fine. For you, are you okay?
We're doing well. Thank you. Thanks for calling. Today we are discussing about the human rights violation in Angola. What's your thoughts about the human rights violation in Angola, Mr. Macom Angola?
I see that this is a problem with Angola. Myself, I say Angola is not good. My problem is what Eduardo Santos, what he think for Angola? All the people is not sleeping, no good, no order, no nothing. What or some to pray or some to think for Paraguayan people. That I ask you.
Do you think the international community should do something about it, or the Angolans the one who need to change this the violation of human rights in Angola?
Yes, sir. You say you have it to change.
Right. And do you think the international community should speak out about those violations in Angola? Mr. Makam Angola.
Yeah, I wanted to change Angola, to change everything else. For people to live like this, our country live, be quiet. And now see Angola have all the time with trouble. That is no good.
Absolutely, I definitely agree. It's no good at all. No. The problem, I believe, the problem we have in Angola is there's not a lot of information coming out of Angola. It's a very closed society. It's almost like North Korea, where people, it's difficult to get information from Angola. Now, the regime does, they pay a lot of lobbies here in Washington. To sell an image that has nothing to do with Angola, whether it's in regard to human rights or something else. But let me ask you, Mr. Serafin. So the Angola got a seat at the UN. I mean, does that change anything in regard to human rights issues in Angola?
Well, the seat that united the Angolan was granted by the United Nations. Most likely, forced the government to comply with the laws that has previously agreed upon with the United Nations. That allows now. It remains to be seen whether this government will be able to comply with those laws. We had seen in the past several times the government breaking those laws, and the records show for themselves which kind of government we're dealing with. Again, we are dealing with career criminals individuals. These individuals have been in power for such a long time. They know how to manipulate the system. They have all the resources at their disposal. They have the control, unlimited control of our funds, money, if you wish.
Mm-hmm.
They have resources. They have tremendous access to the government structures, the government institutions, for which, you know, which they have been using to commit crime against defenseless citizens. Now, by being admitted into the United Nations, of course, this government will be more exposed to international arena. And of course, local Angolans will have the opportunity to demand the more, or expect more from the government to improve, make some improvements of human rights in the country.
It seems to me that I that's what I've seen so far, or I've read as well. So whenever there's something going on in Angola, whether it's a protest, so the Angolan regime blame the U.S. and the West, in particular the U.S., supporting those youth movement or perhaps those who are planning to protest. I remember not too long ago, U.S. accused, sorry, rather, Angola accused U.S. trying to arm the the opposition, when in reality we all knew that that wasn't the case. But we also have, on the other hand, the civil society, not everyone, but some of them, saying the reason why, one of the reasons why this regime has been on the power for so long, for 35 years, is because on the last 10 or 7 years or more, the U.S. has been supporting this regime. And I'm not quite sure where the truth lies between those two arguments, but it seems to me the U.S. has been accused from both sides. And I'm not quite sure what the U.S. government should do in order to clarify where the U.S. stand, whether it stand by the people who have been oppressed by Angolan government, or it stand by the regime. But also there are those who argue that, well, it really shouldn't matter because at the end of the day, we need to solve our own problems. So what's your take on it, Serafin?
Well, listen, we have to bear in mind that, number one, the last decisions, the last say for the Angolan political situation remains on the hands of the Angolans themselves. Mm-hmm. We cannot just depend on any given foreign government to come and rescue us, while we don't even have any perspective what we want to do in relation to replacement of this government. So now it is incumbent upon us to come out strong in united voice to announce to the world what exactly we want. Well, we of course look complaining here or there will never help anyone unless we do something. Actions speak louder than words. So no. Of course, I mean, you can blame the United States. You can partially blame the United States for what is going on in Angola, as well as other Western societies like Germany, France, or UK. But you have to remember this, though. Apart from this Western society, you have the Chinese. Okay, and you have the Russians. The Chinese basically they are the biggest importers of oil importers, and they are the biggest they are the financiers of Angolan government. So the Russians will supply a part of the Russian supply apart from weaponry. They also supply the technical military training, medical equipment, and military counterintelligence. Mm-hmm. Now, apart from these, now we are talking about at official level. Well, whereby the government, Angolan government, deals with its foreign counterparts. But apart from all of these, We have a president who is affiliated or associated with the international mafia. That's the most serious issue here. So no, we have the leader of our society dealing basically with mafiosos. Mm-hmm. We're talking about when we saw, like about 2 weeks ago, for the first time, the Angolan president had the audacity to pose for pictures with Mr. Su Jinghua, when they were inaugurating a beer factory. After so many years of allegation allegations of Mestre dos Santos' association with this individual, who is Alain Soujingoua, who is a criminal, international criminal, who this individual had seen, who saw his assets frozen, you know, in the United States of America. The individual, you know, who has been even forbidden to enter this in this country. So no, and also we see that apart from this individual, Mr. Dos Santos being associated with other criminals, career individuals at the international level. So we cannot just blame one. We cannot just blame one single country. Not even China, not even the Russia, unless we as a people come mm-hmm. together and say in a solid, only unique voice, enough is enough. It is incumbent upon us to take this initiative, because if we don't, no one else will do for us.
Absolutely, absolutely. Thank you, Ms. Serafine. Mr. George, I was wondering. So we all know that Dos Santos has he controls all the revenues come from oil and diamonds. But if you will read the reports here in the U.S., the Freedom House report, which says Angola is not a free state or nation. If we read the reports from the Department of State Human Rights, the annual report, it clear says that Angola. Highlights the human rights abuses committed by the Angolan government. They talk about degradation, punishment. They talk about excessive force. They talk about unlawful killing, so on and so forth. So I was just wondering, there are a lot of reports going on. They clear emphasize how the human rights issue or how the Angolan government has violated the human rights over and over again, but yet is struggling. Is nothing has been done to preempt or to mitigate those issues. What is your take on it? I was just wondering how can we. Where's the place like the UN that perhaps would be the place where they could mitigate those issues, but yet it seems to me the regime is getting more applauses for this systematic violation of human rights than anything else, which is extremely frustrated, you know.
It's very pertinent that we understand. We can write all the best books, we can write all the selling books. At the end of the day, there is a center in which all countries meet and have an application towards that law, and we're talking about international law. You know, it's very clear. José Eduardo Santos has never been greeted with any single international law. You know, it doesn't matter whether it's a sitting president or it's a standing president or it's a sleeping president. We have to look at the laws and what do international laws adjudicate towards such abuses. I do remember very vividly and in my criminal law class, which states very clear that murder has no statute of limitation. But I so believe that if that statute is expanded for too long, people tend to forget the crimes that have been committed and the witnesses tend to disappear. Now, the right time is now, where all of us need to come on board and make a decision to the International Criminal Court. Look, this is what we are presenting to you, and these are the facts that we have on the ground. Now, you make a systematic decision based on the letter of the law, not based on what we adjudicate to you. We do not want to dictate to him. But he is a person that we very well know. If you look at the report from Rafael Marques de Moura, it states very clear including the individuals that gave him the information that, look, it's like diamonds and petroleum is not a blessing for Angola. You know, it has been an instrument of corruption and death. And therefore, we Angolans are suffering more than we suffered during the Portuguese time. Now, like Sarafino just pointed out a few minutes ago, well, we as Angolans, we wore it to ourselves to fight against such oppressions. You know, I always tell Etel, the old generation, all they wanted was a black man to be on their leadership, freedom from the whites. Now, today, the young generation must begin to demand that we have rights as citizens, and our rights are not being respected. We are killed like dogs. The Japanese can run over us in the red on the streets. They face no justice. The Japanese can sell a lot of Angolians on the international market for slavery. Currently, I was reading a report for this guy who was arrested, Chiliping was arrested, who is under investigation in Portugal, that he runs a prostitution cybernet in Brazil. All these are facts. You know, it's very clear that we cannot have people of that magnitude in leadership. I mean, it's very shameful. It's a cake. How do we, as Angolans, except to have the worst kind of leaders in the world? People are involved in drugs, people are involved in money laundering. What I do not understand, if I have $200, if I have $2,000 in my house, they immediately come for me. I mean, it doesn't matter. I have no protection because that it's defined under money laundering. You cannot have such a substantial amount of money in your house. That's how banks were created. Now, we are seeing people moving millions and get arrested, and aeroplanes being arrested in Miami, not allowed to leave because there was a lot of money from one of the politician's son. And yet, the world is quiet. The world thinks, well, in as long as we can get the oil, we cannot do anything. Well, but remember, even during the war of liberation or the civil war, the United States of America was still making business with MPLA, if you remember very correctly. They went into fight because they wanted to make sure that Russia does not expand its power, neither does Cuba. That's why they began to support people like Savimbi. This will perpetuate in as long as we have capable people. People are willing to put their lives on risk. People were willing to take on this government. Change is possible. But if we stay and talk, and do nothing, nothing will ever. Because José Eduardo Santos believes that Angolans are just like barking dogs. They just talk, and they do nothing. Because there is no way a man with a very, very positive or smart conscience can believe that what's happening in Egypt or what happened in Egypt, what happened in Tunisia, what is happening in Burkina Faso today, cannot one day happen to him, unless you're a fool. There is a time in which he has to let go and begin to believe, well, I might be the next. Angolans are not asking for anything more than reforms. Angolans are not asking for more than anything more than their freedom. All they're asking for, stop the operation, stop stealing money from an economy, constitute a proper government, and then we'll talk later about the money you've stolen. As long as you can bring it back to the economy, we are fine with it. You know? Now, this has to... Look, I doubt whether Angola is a real opposition. Sometimes I sit here and think, what is the opposition doing? I talked one time to Samakuba, and this position was that the problem we have is we are not... If UNITA itself can stand against such oppressions, MPLA would automatically attack us, and the civil war begins in Angola. I said, but a civil war without people are not armed. How is that possible? Well, MPLA always creates...
I apologize to you. People are dying nevertheless, right? I mean, the Santos regime are killing people. in the, at least I needed to understand that they are killing people every single day, either because they speak up against the government or the president, or because they belong to a different political party. But Mr. George, could you please explain what happened to to Kasule Kamuling, if you could, to those who may not don't know what happened to those two youth.
The stories coming out of Angola are not very clear. They're shadows in bits and bits. Well, I asked one time, just like when the law for later cidadania or law of citizenship, whatever, was passed. I said, look, we cannot talk in the empty. You know, we are in a world where we have to put evidence forward. And I called the revolutionary movement, and I called a few individuals, including UNITA, and I said, I want you guys to do me a favor. Can you send me a bill, which is the proposal for the law in which the president wanted to change, to give himself extra powers? Without this bill, we cannot talk anything. I mean, we are not children. We just go out there and start shouting, oh, he wants to change the law. Where's the evidence?
But they didn't deny that Mr. Dos Santos didn't deny that he submitted this citizenship act on parliament. Basically,
yeah, but we have to hold it to the evidence. It's very vital that we hold into that evidence. Let's see this. Let's look at it. Make photocopies and keep them, because you see, you can always change it at any time. That look, they misunderstood me. That's not what I meant to say. Now, but if you have tangible evidence, then say, look, you're not going to change because this is what you wrote. It's very vital. Like Kasule Kamulingo, this one says this story, this other one brings that story. At the end of the day, no one really knows what happened to these kids. You know, oh, this guy is now promoted, but he's one of the assassins. Where is the evidence? You see, in law, we're not just going to be talking, throwing up words in the air. Everything we say, we must be able to substantiate it with facts. It's very vital. And I say, whenever you have the facts, come back and let's make a report based on facts. You know, this is very vital. I always tell people, let's not sit down there and just watch. We know the fact that José Eduardo Santos is a dictator. We can prove it. We know the fact that José Eduardo Santos is a criminal. We can prove it. We know the fact that José Eduardo Santos has stolen tons and tons of money and made himself and his family rich. We can prove it. But there's things that we cannot prove. And that's very vital. We can prove it. But people on the ground choose not to do so because they feel bringing such issues to light will create a bombshell or an atomic bomb among the Angolans. Well, let it be.
Right.
Let it be.
Absolutely, absolutely. Mr. Serafin, can you please tell us what happened to two young men, young activists, Kasule and Kamuling, and the other one, which Ganga, Mr. Ganga, also was assassinated by the government.
Well, you have to understand, and again, I will repeat or reemphasize what I have been advocating from the very beginning. We live in a society whereby we live in a society governed by criminal career individuals. These guys, they have been in power since 1975. They have got away with so many crimes that, you know, these Kamulingas and Gongos, all these, this mean nothing to them as long as they continue to have the absolute control of our national coffers.
Right now, I completely understand. But it doesn't mean anything to them, but means something to us.
Take someone's
life only because he believes that we should make change, you know, we should make some social, economic, or political change in a country where the government claimed to be a democratic government or democratic state. Well, this is unacceptable. So,
Florindo, But Florinda, you have to understand this. You have to understand this. This is, you know, the death of this young, you know, I understand that the death of this young fellows, you know, are really, you know, regrettable. I understand it. I completely agree with you.
We're just looking at the superficial
issues. We have to go deeper to understand exactly, to see exactly where the real problems lies. The real problems here is that you know, corruption and violence. These two individuals that you have, the young guys that you have just mentioned, happen to be victims of violence. No. This is what we have to call, you know, this is where we as a civil society have to come up and demand from the government responsibility, accountability. Someone will have to answer for this. So, my question to you is this. Can we, and again, Georgia was just saying to you a few minutes ago, about it was just naming a few things that we know. DeSantis is a public fund embezzler. We can prove it. We can prove that DeSantis is criminal. We can prove it. But no, can we? My point is that can we take him? Hold him accountable for all this, this accusation in under our judicial system.
Yeah. Yes. So here's the thing, Mr. Rafi. Now, the Angola embassy in Washington, they are using the Angola embassy to basically as a channel to commit crimes, not just in Angola, but here in the U.S. as well. There was a money laundering not too long ago where U.S. has to shut down the Angolan embassy in Washington due to those activities. Now, there was someone who was coming to U.S. trying to enter U.S. with a lot of cash. We don't know what they were trying to do with that amount of money. Now, we also know that there are people here who are here just to commit crime. I mean, so this is a criminal individual.
Here's the deal.
But I want you to understand one thing very fast. Circumstantial evidence. Circumstantial evidence is real evidence when it's supported with facts. If $200 million go missing in your house, neither you nor your children stole it, then who stole it? Now, in this regard, we have to bring circumstantial evidence and support it with facts. There is a lot of circumstantial evidence pointing at Eduardo Santos as an embezzler. There is a lot. I mean, where did you get the $20 million in account? Where did your daughter get the $15 million in account? All these are facts because money is missing from China, money is missing from Russia, money is missing from Angolan coffers. Where is the money going to?
Well, you look at this. I completely agree with what George is saying. But remember this, Florindo. I've mentioned previously about Angolan individuals using Angolan's institution, governmental institution, to commit crime against defenseless Angolans. And now, my question, you know, as long as we, as a civic society, as long as we keep our mouths shut, as long as we don't hold them accountable for it in our system, in our judicial system, They will continue to do the same. We are dealing with the criminals. This is what you have to bear in mind. We are dealing with the criminals.
Absolutely.
They, in order for them to change their behavior, we have two things to do: either by strikes, or hold them accountable in our judicial system, which I doubt, you know, which I doubt it's possible to do under the circumstances that the circumstances that we live on. I honestly believe this our judicial system is nothing but a kangaroo system whereby everything is detected by detected by Mr. Dos Santos. Do you think? Remember, one of the youngest guys, the Kamulinga, the one of these guys that died. That is the young guy that died, or were assassinated.
There was assassinated by the government.
One of the guys that were assassinated used to be a presidential guard. Used to be a presidential guard. Now, do you think Mr. Dos Santos doesn't know anything about it? Do you think is chief of the presidential house doesn't know anything about it? So, remember this: nothing in Angola, nothing in Luanda is done by coincidence. Nothing at all.
I completely understand that, but my concern is not just that Dos Santos, Mr. Dos Santos, is a criminal. Is what he's doing, using the government, has institutionalized the violence against its own people. He's terrorized its own people. He's using the public the revenue from oil and diamonds to support governments like the Russian government. When the Russian invaded Ukraine, the Angolan government came openly and they supported the Russian invasion of Ukraine. There are people here in the U.S. who live in they live in fear. They are afraid to speak out because they think the government, Angolan government, will send people to kill them. That's how severe how is this problem. So it's not just people in Angola living with fear, but it's also here Angolans living in U.S. with fear.
Florinda, I understand. Look, I understand what you're saying, Florinda. I understand what you're saying. I have been a subject of a death threat so many times, either online or by phone. But do you think this will deter me from doing what is the right thing to do? What is the right thing to do? The right thing to do, that I think, is to expose these individuals to the extent that they know they will be held accountable for one day. I know that, you know, when I have anonymous calls, when I have anonymous emails threaten me. Of course, I'm a human. You know, I'm human, and I have to take precautions to protect myself. But and remember, I mean, you have also to remember this. Whenever you are in a situation whereby your views are different from those of the government, you automatically enlisted in a blacklist. So get used to it, my friend. Now, I'm going to tell you this. We have to start going from, you know, complaining into action. That's the moment right now. We need to get action. Some action has to happen.
No, I completely understand. But my main concern perhaps is, you don't really need to live in Angola to live with fear because of a dictator. But even people in the U.S., Angolans in the U.S. or in Europe, they also live under fear. As you said, you have received threats. You have calls, anonymous calls threatening you. This is unacceptable. I don't know if I'm missing something here. George, I know Mr. Antonio Camoso is also online as well. But, I mean, we shouldn't live in fear here in the U.S. And I believe people in Angola shouldn't live in fear as well, just because of one man who want to stay in the power for life. I mean,
Florindo, you have to remember this. This is the second generation Mr. Dos Santos is governing. This is the second generation that is governing. So most of these guys, most of the guys that this generation, they don't know anything other than Mr. Dos Santos. They embrace him. They adore him. Okay? And a lot of these young guys, they're the ones who they come here to go to school here in the United States. And I have no doubts. And all the guys, all the folks that live here also in the United States have, for some economic reasons, became vulnerable to the blackmail done by the government. That's why a lot of them instead of fighting against the government, they have become so tired, and eventually they had to, you know, eventually they just surrendered.
George, what do you think about what was Serafin just said? Do you agree? I mean, do you think there are a lot of people or some people who really adore Dos Santos, or it's just a culture of dependency that Dos Santos has implemented in the Angolan society?
Actually, the word adore is an understatement, because what is in Angola is that I'll use one word used by one politician. You know, everybody requires milk and bread and, of course, cheese. And this is the man who's got a cheese. Now, people tend to forget. All they're looking is on their own table. They're not looking beyond the friend's table. Look, Africa is a social society in which we live in a cluster community. You go to your neighbor and ask for salt or tomato. Next day, this neighbor, you go to the neighbor and ask for oil. And this is how we have lived. I am not saying socialist is a good thing, but I'm saying social life has been part of our Angolan context. Now, having said that, it's vital we understand that some of these people, if you talk them in privately, they'll tell you, man, what this man is doing is really not good. But again, understand me. This is the guy who pays me. This is the guy who puts the money on my table. And this is my family. I have to look after my family. But again, that's being a coward. That's not thinking like a nationalist, you know. Of course, there are people who adore of them who really adore him, who believe that no matter what, I can take a bullet for him. It is normal under any society. But then we have to draw a line. Well, can someone define me when people speak of Angolan intellectual society? What do they mean?
Well, look, when they define by Angolan intellectual society what they mean, that's what exactly what it says, you know. Literally speaking, are the educated people.
An intellectual is a person understands.
Intellectual, you know, intellectually, basically, what they mean to say is that, you know, those educated people of our society, those that were able to achieve some higher education, those are the ones that probably they are talking about.
But
the majority cannot reason.
Those educated people that sometimes they're referring to, they also have their own bias, keep in mind. I mean, some of them, they have own bias for good government. Some of them have their own bias against the government. But the reality is, we can all have own opinions, but we can all have own facts. The facts in Angola are clear in terms of the systematic violation for human rights. The facts are clear in terms of the government stealing for its own people. By investment overseas. Keep in mind, Angola is an African government who most invested overseas in 2013, according to a few reports. Now, we don't have time today to discuss why a government would decide to invest overseas, when Angola, they pretty much miss it. They don't have most of Angola don't have access to electricity, clean water. They don't. There's not all Angolans have access to education. So I mean, really, it's still not self-sufficient in terms of agriculture. Still importing almost everything in a grocery store. So why a government would decide to invest outside the country when a country needs pretty much everything from water, energy, and you name it, pretty much everything. We are running out of time. I would like to thank you very much once again to participate in our second edition of Radio Angola show in English version. We also have a Portuguese version that's as well. And I wish you a nice weekend. Please don't forget, tomorrow we have a show. We have an interview with Mr. Domingos da Cruz, who's a writer, activist, lives in Angola. And we also will have a he's going to be with us tomorrow, I believe at 9 a.m., and we can ask questions. We're going to have the opportunity to ask questions to see what he thinks about the socio-economic and the political situation in Angola. On Sunday, we're going to have Mr. Luis Araújo, who is the former coordinator of SOS Habitat. He will be with us as well to analyze the Angolan president's strategy. Well, thank you very much.
Hey, do not forget to post that on Facebook so that I repost it. The program, the way from tomorrow up to Sunday.
I will do. I will do. Thank you. Thank you very much, Mr. George, Mr. Serafin, and I think Mr. Camoso and Mr. Makamangola, they left already.
All right. Thank you so much as well. Have a great weekend.
Thank you. This is one more show. I would like also to remind everyone we are accepting donations on our website, Friends of Angola. Please visit our website, Friends of Angola, www.friendsofangola.org. We accept donation to support our radio station, which is Radio Angola. It's important for us. This radio was founded and created by Angolans, and all the support is important to make sure that we do have this platform where we can discuss any issue related to Angola. And thank you once again, everyone, and you all have a nice weekend.
Get up.